Hi, I'm Dr. Kim Corson, and I'm a developmental psychologist and coach who blends art and science to help people thrive.
And I'm your co-host, Daisha Clay. I'm here to learn what Kim's teaching too, to ask lots of questions along the way, and to make sure that you have fun while you're listening.
And on this podcast, we aim to teach you about the tools you can use to get to know yourself better.
To maybe even become a better version of yourself. And we're going to teach you how to actually use these tools in your own life. Hey Kim.
Hey Daisha.
I feel so great today. How are you feeling?
Apparently not as great as you.
Well, you know, I was thinking this morning, I woke up and I was feeling a little bit snurfy because I didn't get enough sleep, you know, and then I was just like, you quit that stinking thinking.
Stinking thinking.
Get your attitude straight. And so I did, and now I'm fine.
Okay, it sounds like you just stepped out of a 1940s musical. Are you going to sing for us?
Oh, the absolutely
red
not.
Farmer, what is it? The Wells Fargo wagon
know
is coming down the street. I was in that musical, and I just forgot the lyrics. That's sad.
I know zero amount about musicals. This is where we differ as people.
I know. And did you ever watch Schmickadoon?
No, because it sounded terrible to me.
Oh, no, it's like, so good.
It's an entire show about musicals.
Oh, but it pokes fun at musicals and also lifts them up in a beautiful way. It's great. It's really great.
I know. This is what I've heard. Because you know why? Because I'm such a nerd that I heard this from Terry Gross on Fresh Air. Because Terry Gross freaking loves a musical. She does like all of this serious, you know, political stuff. And she's this very, you know, well-respected interviewer. You get a musical person in front of her and she is just fallen over herself with joy.
Do you think that Terry Gross would come on to our show and sing show tunes with me? Because I would love life at that moment.
Terry Gross came on our show in any capacity. At that point, you could kill me and I would be fine because I would be complete as a person. But not really, but
I just want to sing musicals with someone who truly appreciates musicals in the way that I do.
Terry Gross is your girl.
Yeah. See? Terry Gross, please come on to our show and sing musicals with me. Your choice. I will follow suit.
Oh my God. Anyhow, so now that we've established these very important things that are definitely going to happen on our podcast.
Oh, definitely. I hope. Oh, please, please.
What are we going to be talking about in today's episode that I'm so definitely going to be happy about?
So definitely happy. We are going to be talking about gratitude. Actually, for the next few episodes, this whole month, we're talking about gratitude, and I'm talking about gratitude on social media. But today, I want to focus on something that a friend of mine calls gratitude peer pressure. He said this the other day on his social feed, and it really resonated with me because I was trying to figure out how to describe this phenomenon that happens in November.
Mm-hmm.
Where everyone talks about gratitude, and I am talking about gratitude on social media, and we are talking about it on this podcast, and I was thinking, even before I saw his post about peer pressure, I thought, oh, I don't want to just be on the bandwagon with this, but I also want to talk about gratitude because it's very important. I mean, there are so many research studies out there about how gratitude changes the brain. And, you know, it has physical benefits, cognitive benefits, emotional and social benefits, all of these wonderful benefits that come from gratitude. But it tends to get stuffed down our throat.
Yeah.
In November.
It's like this sickly sweet kind of gratitude too.
Yeah. It's like too much pumpkin spice.
It's like death by pumpkin spice gratitude.
It is. It's like the great pumpkin vomited up a pumpkin spice latte filled with sugar glitter.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know anyone who genuinely feels this way. So it's one of those curious things in our culture where there is just all of this gratitude. You like, even if you go to this, to like a home goods store of some sort, you can find like signs to go in your house around Thanksgiving that are all about like hashtag grateful.
Like the word.
Yes.
It reminds me of that commercial. What is the commercial where the adult life coach coaches people not to be like their parents? Oh my God.
Those are some of the funniest commercials on right now.
I mean, I'm sure the point of the commercial is for me to remember exactly what the ad is for, but I don't. But the point is that he says, do we really need a sign to live, laugh, and love? No, we don't.
I love that when she starts to say yes, he just rips the sign out of her hand and throws it into the trash. And she goes, oh.
Yes. So I think that everyone has a moment like that with gratitude peer pressure where they just want to rip the signs, throw them in the trash at some point in time, you know? And so that's why I wanted to focus this month on what do we do? How do we have gratitude? If we know that gratitude is a really good thing, how can we have gratitude when we're not feeling like posting it on signs and glitter all over the place, when we're not feeling hashtag blessed, right?
Well, and it makes you feel like a Grinch.
It does, because the thing is that gratitude is important. And so, yeah, you don't want to be a Grinch. You want to have balance with it. And I think that that leads me to what I'd like to talk about today, which is toxic positivity. Because toxic positivity is when you lose that balance. When you tilt everything to the positive side of the spectrum and say, this is the only thing that I'm going to talk about. This is the only thing I'm going to think about. And this is the only thing I'm going to project outward to everybody is this glittery positivity. And it's very surface level positivity. It's very inauthentic positivity. And it doesn't really reflect everything that's going on, because as humans, we just don't live like that. That we just don't live our lives in 100% positivity all the time. And that's okay. That's normal.
Yeah. And sparkle barf pumpkin spice positivity.
We have sparkle barf moments. Don't get me wrong. I've had pumpkin spicy moments, and you know, I love pumpkin spicy moments. There's nothing wrong with that. But when we are so focused on that we dampen everything else down and we ignore other feelings that we have, that's when I think it's, well, research shows too, that it's a problem.
Yeah, it's curious, isn't it? Because I think we all have moments of gratitude, and I agree with you. I think those things, like, it's important to notice that when it's happening. I think that, you know, the human experience is a mixture of those kinds of moments, and then also moments of feeling completely crappy, of feeling crappy about yourself for feeling crappy, and also kind of everything in between, where sometimes you just are feeling nothing about what's happening in your world. You're just kind of going along and not really noticing it at all. Yeah, it seems like any view of your life or any filter that you're putting on your life that cuts out any of that is, it's kind of out of whack, right? It's not a full picture of what's going on.
It's not. And two things come up for me when you talk about that. One is the neutral part that you were talking about, that there's no neutrality. You're only looking on one side and you're not even having those neutral feelings. And then the other part is the idea that we could feel two feelings at one time. So I want to talk about the neutrality part first. We live in a very superlative culture right now. One of the words that gets used quite a bit and has actually, I was reading a lot of articles about how it's overused, is the word amazing. Things are amazing. And it's amazing or it's terrible, but there's no room for anything in between. And so something that's just good, if we just say, if you say, you know, how's your day? It's good. Or how is this food that I made? Oh, it's good. That's not our default anymore. Our default is amazing. It's amazing. And then good, in a world of amazing, good starts to feel like meh. You know, it doesn't feel good anymore. It just feels, it feels meh. And then neutral feels like terrible. If you have no feelings at all. And so we've lost the full spectrum of what good can be because we've made everything so stark with amazing or terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And we categorize things like that a lot. Our brains categorize things also as good and bad. And that leads me to my second point, that because our brains say something is either good or bad, and we've created these categories, and now we've bumped that up to amazing or terrible, we forget the fact that we can hold both of those things at the same time, that something can be good and bad, that we can be happy and sad, you know? And so in terms of gratitude, we can be grateful and also think that what's happening is pretty crappy. We can feel both of those feelings at the same time. You know, I quote the great Daniel Tiger, which I have to, because of course, you know, both of us come from a public media background, so we have to throw in Daniel Tiger in there. But the great poet Daniel Tiger said, sometimes you feel two feelings at the same time, and that's okay. And I think that that speaks to why toxic positivity is not helpful, because it negates the fact that you could feel two feelings at one time, you know, and it minimizes the hurt and the pain, which is important to look at. And, you know, a lot of times people need to really look at that hurt and pain so that they can work through and get to that brighter side.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like the narrative of toxic positivity is something that robs us of the full spectrum of our emotions and of, you know, sort of having an authentic, full technicolor view of life, but that we're also doing harm to ourselves. Like, that doesn't seem like it's doing us any good to do that, to weight things on the positive end, because then it's not that makes the negative stuff go away. It's just that we're avoiding it, or we're not looking at it, or we're not giving it names. So I had a question, though, and that is, why is it that our brains have such a hard time with gray areas, with neutrality in general? Why are our brains so black and white? Why is it so counterintuitive to us to say, okay, I can hold two emotions at the same time?
Well, we start categorizing things from the time that we're a young child. We place things into categories. Children as young as 3 years old have already categorized people in terms of race and ethnicity. So we put things into categories because that's how we understand the world. When we're young children, we need to understand the world through what we call schemas. And schemas are categories that we place things in order to understand how things relate to each other. When we learn the word cat, everything that we see that looks like a cat in our mind, which is very simplistic at the time, the way that we categorize that, falls into the cat category. So we go to the zoo, we see a tiger, we call it a cat or kitty, right? We may even see a dog that has a long tail and we think, oh, it's a kitty, because we have decided that anything with a long tail is a cat, right? And then as we get older, we start to be able to understand the nuances and we can add to our schemas. But the point of all of that is not to give you a primer on child development and the way our brains work, but the point is to talk about the fact that as humans, we categorize things, and that's just how our brain works. And we, as humans, like certainty, and we want to understand the world, and so we put them into that category. Also, our brains, after a while, create shortcuts because there's too many things that we have to learn in life and too many things that we have to hold on to. So our brains create shortcuts, and often those shortcuts go along with those schemas. So it's easier for our brain just to go, oh, yeah, that's that, and move on.
I think as we have, we're only in technically episode 3 of this podcast, and I have already learned that our human minds, the way that the our brain has evolved, it sometimes is working against, like we sort of have to work against our own evolution to have a full experience of things. And this is one of those areas.
Well, our brain is working to keep us safe.
Okay.
And I'm actually going to get into that a lot more on the next episode when I talk about polyvagal theory. But our brain is working to keep us safe. It's, you know, it was designed, it has evolved to keep us safe, as we talked about, from the saber-toothed tiger. I have to throw that in there again.
Rawr.
Rawr. Okay. But, and our role in that is to help it to realize whether or not it needs to kick in the stress response or if it's okay to calm that stress response. And in terms of, you know, talking about toxic positivity, if you're constantly telling yourself that a whole section of your feelings don't matter and you're invalidating those feelings, you're shutting down that section of yourself that is going to keep you safe. Because what happens is that you don't have control over those feelings. Those feelings are going to come back, and they're just going to come back louder because your brain's going to say, hey, you're not listening to me, you know? And you need to pay attention to it. That's the whole thing. And I think the reason that we shut so much of that down is because we're afraid of really sitting with those feelings. We don't like sitting with those feelings. We don't like feeling pain. We don't like feeling sadness. It's not a comfortable place to be. But if we can remind ourselves that this is a natural thing, our feelings are natural, and those feelings run the range of emotions all over the place. You know, I think about the Disney movie Inside Out, which I absolutely love, because it was actually, they actually talked to a developmental psychologist to sort of figure out the way that, like to figure out how they could characterize the way that emotions form. So it's done so well in terms of the way that we form emotions and the way that emotions grow as we age. And I love the section where joy in that movie just keeps trying to put sadness in a little box. She literally draws a square, you know, or there's a circle, I can't remember. She draws something on the floor and she's like, go sit in that, go stand in that space. That's your job. That's your role, you know. And you can't help but hear it in a Leslie Knope voice because, of course, it's the same actress, right? So you just love, you know, that idea. But that's exactly what toxic positivity is. We're trying to put sadness over there in a box because we don't want it to color all of what's going on. But what happens in the movie is sadness has her place. She needs to be there because the little girl needs sadness to come out because she needs that feeling validated. And when joy was pushing her away, it was just creating a lot of anxiety and anger and a lot of other emotions that were coming up because sadness wasn't allowed to come forth. And when joy finally said, okay, sadness, have your day, that's when she was able to feel both at the same time. And the way that they show it in the movie is they've got these little balls, these little spheres that are colored based on the certain type of emotion that's happening. And it's just so, like, I get really geeky as a developmental scientist who, you know, on this part, but it's the first time that you start to see that there's a blue and a yellow ball, that she's got joy, but she also has sadness at the same time, and that she's holding that in one little memory ball. And that's exactly, you know, what this is. That's that balance that you can hold both at the same time. And that's okay. That's normal.
That kind of answers the question, the extra dumb bonus question that I was going to ask you for this episode, which is, why is it important to not do this? Why is it important, so important, to work at being honest with ourselves and authentic, live life authentically? And I think you just kind of answered that. It's that because of the way that our brains work, it's not that if we are not acknowledging sadness, if we are not acknowledging feelings of being overwhelmed or whatever other negative emotion, that they go away just because we're not looking at them. Tra-la-la-la, I feel great. When we're not being mindful of those emotions, all that we're doing is inviting them to come up elsewhere in our lives, because they are there, they are real, they are as real as the gratitude, they are as real as the blessedness, and they will mm-hmm. be heard in some way. They will come up in some way.
They're going to come out, and they're going to probably come up mm-hmm. louder.
Because now they're upset.
Because, they're trying to... Mm-hmm. Emotions are energetic forms of getting our attention.
And I have to make a confession, I realize. And that is that I, Daisha Clay, have been guilty for years of toxic positivity.
Really?
Yes. I have only realized this within the last year or two. And... Yeah, I had no idea. It's insidious. And I think, you know, not to go off too deep into it, but basically, I think I have an allergy for various and sundry reasons to depression, to negativity. I have this real desire to take life by the horns and, you know, for this whole, like, being alive thing to be all it can be. And that's what I want out of life. And I think that's great and all. And I like that part of myself. But I think that in doing that, what I have been doing for many years was I couldn't allow myself to be angry. I couldn't admit when I was feeling depressed. I couldn't admit that maybe I needed a little bit of help from somebody. I also, and this was the really bad part, realized that I was demanding those things of other people. And, you know, when somebody was going through a rough time, if they maybe didn't respond to my amazing pep talk by feeling so much better, then I was like, well, I mean, you're just doing it to yourself, you know. Like, not exactly like that. That's not true. I didn't hold people to that standard. But I think I was like, come on, buck up, little camper. You know, you're in control of your own life. And it's how you react to what's happening to you, not the things that happen to you. And I think in the last year or two, in part because my partner is a wonderful person who points out these things in me, my flaws. Thank you. I started seeing that, like, that's not a very nice thing to ask of people. And it's not a nice thing to ask of yourself.
Well, and I think we all are guilty of toxic positivity. It's not a thing that we can say, oh, those people over there are toxically positive, you know, because they are vomiting pumpkin spice glitter everywhere all over social media. You know, that's just one version of it. But we all have our toxic positive moments, because what it can look like is, well, it can look at like a lot of different things. It can be hiding your true feelings, stuffing down those uncomfortable emotions that we talked about in the first few episodes on here. And then, like you were talking about, using feel good quotes or statements to try to, I think what we try to do is to fix a situation, but what we end up doing is actually minimizing a tough situation.
Yeah.
You know, it could be worse, we would say, right? And the flip side of that, like a non-toxic way of saying that would be, I know this is tough right now. Do you want to talk about it?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so there's a difference there between, hey, buck up, little camper, it could be worse, which is minimizing and makes the person feel guilty for actually feeling sad about something, and saying, you know, I know this is tough. Let's talk about this. Let's see how we can fix it. So you're actually sitting with them. You're holding space, is what mm-hmm. we call in the psychology world, with them. You might be able to help fix it. You might not, but your motivation of wanting to help is still there, but you're not minimizing someone in the process.
I think and this might be helpful to people, because I think this happens to a lot of us. The reason I got to this place of this sort of toxic positivity was because I spent a long time in a dark place dealing with depression and anxiety and things like that. And once I got to a place where I was better, there's a saying, and I can't remember what it is, but basically it's something along the lines of, there's no bigger zealot than the person who is a convert. You know, mm-hmm. And I think I found all of these tools that really helped me get to a better place. I was just like, mm-hmm. Oh, all I need to do is, you know, see my thoughts objectively, and then I can just take them and I can put them in my galvanized pressure cooker and everything will be great. And why can't everyone else mm-hmm. around me do that too? If they could only do that, they too could have great lives and they wouldn't be in the bell jar anymore. And so yeah, I think that's where it came from. So yeah.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with looking on the bright side, but it can be hard to see the good sometimes. And if you're, you know, you have a friend who's struggling and you say, hey, just look on the bright side, they can't see it a lot of times, you know, and a more positive way, a less toxic way of saying it would be, you know, it's hard to see the good sometimes. Let's see if we can make some sense out of this mess.
Yes, I've really come to see the value of exactly what you're talking about, which is not trying to have a productive conversation with somebody where I'm mm-hmm. like, hey, okay, let's assess your problem, and then here's a way to fix it. But just tell me what's up, like what's going on with you, and not trying to fix it. And that is so hard for me to do, because I want to help, and I want for them to get better. But what you're talking about is such an important thing. And why is that? Why is it so important for us to have somebody to just listen to us and not try to fix it?
That's a multifaceted question. One part of it goes to that toxic positivity part that we were talking about. If you jump straight to the bright side, I want to sing the killer song right now every time I say that.
Mr. Brightside.
If you jump right to the bright side without validating the pain, you're missing an entire component of compassion.
That is such an amazing point.
For yourself and for other people. Yeah. I think that's the first thing that I think of when you were talking about that, is that the element of compassion is gone. I mean, if it feels like there's compassion because you're jumping in and fixing, but you're not having compassion for the pain, you're just trying to minimize or mask the pain. Right. And there's a whole level of compassion that doesn't get activated when you do that.
Also, it sounds like it's important simply to acknowledge that sometimes things are shitty.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can't just go, tra-la-la-la, I shall skip over this, and just go move into a positive state. You have to actually acknowledge the bad stuff and go through it in order to reach a place of actual healing or positivity.
Right. And it is good to reframe and look for the glimmers, the bright side that we'll be talking about later. But if you can't find it, it might be that you need to sit with that mm-hmm. feeling a little bit longer and really try to work through it. And the other part to your question that you were saying about, you know, why is that? I was thinking about my work with my clients. A lot of times I want to jump in and fix. That is my biggest inclination. I want to jump in and say, oh, this is what you should do. This is, you know, do this and we'll fix everything. You know, I just want to come in and be their fairy godmother. And I have to stop myself. I have to really practice sitting with them and letting them come to the decision, and letting them have that autonomy, because we all know what's best for ourselves. We can get advice from other people. And, you know, if they ask for advice from me, I will be happy to give them advice. But I always talk about myself as the GPS, and they're the driver. Mm-hmm. And the GPS can say, okay, here's a whole bunch of different ways that you could maybe go about this, but you're the person in the driver's seat. You're going to pick the path that's the best path for you. I can show you, oh, there might be this obstacle ahead. Oh, there's, you know, there are three routes to your destination. You know, I can show all those kinds of things, but they're the ones that need to be in the driver's seat, and they need to be ready when they're ready. I can't push that. So I have to actually step back and tell myself, okay, this isn't the time to fix. This is the time to hold space and ask questions and see what comes up. And I think that we need to do that with our friends as well when we're sitting with them.
There's so much in what you just said. You know, I think, first of all, about how anything that really seems to stick in the way of advice that I've been able to employ, anything that has been life-changing for me has been something that I am deluded into thinking, usually, that I've come to myself.
Mm-hmm. And honestly, to go back to what you were talking about with just being there to listen to someone, that's what you're doing. When you hold space, and when I say hold space, it has a multifaceted meaning, but for the purposes of what we're talking about here is just creating a safe space and not jumping in to fix, just creating this space that feels safe and connected so someone will talk to you, right? So if you hold space for someone and listen to their story and listen to what they're going through, that can be incredibly powerful. In fact, that sometimes is all that anyone needs at that given moment, because what you're doing is validating and acknowledging how they feel. And so that's that acknowledge, like your role in helping to quote fix is actually just being the person that's helping them to acknowledge what they're feeling, which is that first step.
It's a very egocentric view, I think, that I have taken and that a lot of us take, where it's like, but I know how to fix things and I want to give you the, you know, even if it's coming from a place of love and wanting to help somebody, really, when you think about it, doing that to someone who really just needs somebody to listen is a very kind of selfish act, whereas what you're talking about, the holding of space for somebody, is simply literally creating a space for that person in your life that doesn't include yourself, where you're making a moment, you're making time to listen to somebody purely for them to be able to say what they need to say, and you're just listening compassionately. And I think that can be really hard for us too when we're so used to doing, like, we want to jump in, we want to do, you know.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Because at the root cause of it, the jumping in and fixing isn't about the person at all. It's about us.
Yeah.
We are uncomfortable with that tension and that uncomfortable feeling. We want that to stop. Uh-huh. So we want to jump in to make it feel better for us. I mean, yes, we have empathy for the person and compassion for the person. We want it to stop for them too. But the jumping in part typically comes from the fact that we don't want to vicariously feel that along with them. We want it to stop so that we can also feel better.
Yes.
It's a lot harder to sit and feel that pain with them.
Yeah, it's incredibly hard. And it's hard, I think, often being productive and doing, like having this very Western mentality of gotta do, gotta be productive, gotta build, that sort of proactive approach to the world can often be very wrongheaded, and it can also be a tool of avoidance, which is kind of what you're saying, where it's like, you really,
absolutely,
really, it's, you're sidestepping the act of actually listening to somebody and being there for somebody under the guise of wanting to help them, but actually not wanting to, and that is very true for me. And this kind of goes back to what we were saying before, I find it really hard to listen to somebody who is in deep pain and to not feel that myself. And if I go into fix it mode, mm-hmm. then I'm focused on the fixing as opposed to the actually sitting with them and, mm-hmm. and listening to them.
Mm-hmm.
It's curious too that, not to slag too much on Western civilization, it's got good stuff about it, but another very Western notion is this idea that we're all separate and that the preservation of the self and the ego is very important. And it's kind of like how we go about our lives, I think maybe unconsciously, is making sure that that is very protected. And I think it's really telling that we instinctually, as Westerners, I don't know, maybe this is true in other parts of the world too, move to protect ourselves through these various mechanisms instead of just letting the perceived boundary between us and another person fall for a minute and, you know, actually be there with them. Because we're afraid we're going to get hurt. We're afraid we're going to get sucked in. We're afraid we're going to feel something that we don't want to feel, and that we don't want that unpleasantness. I don't know if I was going anywhere with that, but I just think that's interesting.
Yeah, and I think that goes into that toxic positivity. I can imagine that a lot of it, well, I mean, the research shows that a lot of it comes out of, I can't deal with all of this negativity that's going on, and I'm going to create a boundary for myself that says that only good things can come in, that good vibes only. That's that actual saying went viral all over the place mm-hmm. when the pandemic hit. And the problem with it, there's nothing wrong with good vibes. You know, I'm going to make this clear. Like, there's absolutely, we're going to talk about this in the next episode where we talk about, you know, how important gratitude is and how important it is to see the bright side and to be able to reframe in that way. But creating this wall between yourself and the world that says nothing can get in but positivity, and I will not let anything out but positivity, is it can be, well, mm-hmm. as it says, toxic. It can be dangerous.
I was listening to something on the radio just yesterday, and somebody gave the example of a little kid, you know, your kids not having a good day, and you know, as a parent, mm-hmm. your inclination is to try to make your kid feel better. You don't want for your kid to hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And so you start trying to fix them out of a protectiveness, sort of, out of, I think that's just the place where parents immediately go is like, I want to help my child. But in doing that, what you're actually doing is teaching them that it's not okay to just feel crappy. Like that you, when you try to fix that for somebody,
yeah.
immediately you start trying to go into, we've got to get rid of that. It's an interloper. I've detected an interloper. We must get rid of it. The negativity. Then what you're teaching them is that around you, it's not okay to feel crappy.
Yeah. Back in February, I actually did some ghostwriting for some parenting curriculum on toxic positivity, actually. And the whole thing is that it's very hard to watch our children struggle. I mean, it can almost be physically painful sometimes. You don't want to watch your child struggle. You don't want to watch them get into the... And we have the value of hindsight to be able to look back and go, oh, I know where they're headed. You know, I want to jump in and fix this. But... And sometimes we feel helpless because we don't know what to do, because we know we can't always jump in and fix this, but we don't know what to do with it. And so we default sometimes with these mm-hmm. toxic phrases that we've heard before. And, you know, I hate to say toxic, because it just sounds, you know, It sounds like it's being vicious, but it's really just a default phrase. We have these default phrases, you know, it could be worse. Get over it. It is what it is. Don't be so negative. Look on the bright side. Everything happens for a reason. You know, these kinds of things. We use these, we hear these, and they come out of our mouths because we've been told that many times. So we're not doing it out of being mean or, you know, out of a viciousness. It's just a default statement that we make when we don't know what to say and when we don't know what to do. But the problem with those statements, especially with children, is that it inevitably teaches children to dismiss their feelings rather than working through them. It minimizes and invalidates their feelings, as we talked about already. It can sometimes lead to guilt for the child. And then if you think about the flip side, when someone has made those comments to you, like we hear those comments a lot in grief, right? Everything happens for a reason, those kinds of things. Think about how that immediately hits you when someone makes a comment like that. You feel minimized, invalidated. You feel isolated and alone. And eventually it leads to bottling up your emotions because you don't want to share emotions with people. It's easier just to keep them in because you don't want to hear those phrases anymore. And that's what's happening with the child. And then it ends up, you know, leading to that bottling up, which we've already talked about what happens with that.
And then they turn into us.
And then they turn into us. they turn into all of us. The thing is that it's on a spectrum, right? You know, everybody has toxic positivity in them, and we use it. There are some people that use it more than others, but we all are guilty of making those comments. I've made those comments before, even when I don't mean to, you know. So it's good to have some phrases in your back pocket that can become your default when you can't think of something to say that aren't as toxic.
So I'm gonna get going now because I need to go feel all of my feelings. And once I figure out what they are, I'm gonna text you about them. Okay. So I hope you're available for the rest of the evening.
Always for you, Daisha Clay.
Yeah, I feel like there are a lot of feelings happening that I've been ignoring, in fact. So, all right. Well, I'm going to go get to work.
I think one feeling is the feeling that you need to call Terry Gross and ask her to come sing show tunes with me.
That definitely is a feeling that I'm having, for sure. You know, interestingly, yesterday in my writing class, we were talking about emotions that it's hard to encapsulate in one word. And we were joking about the fact that other languages, older languages, there are often words that capture really nuanced emotions. Like Japanese has a word for, I don't know, this may or may not be actually true, but like the word for how you feel when you see a cherry blossom petal falling at sunset on a spring day. There's a word for that. I was like, man, I wish I had a book of those. And it turns out that a book of these words exists. I'm so excited. I'm going to get it. It's like words from like German and Japanese and other older languages that encapsulate words emotions that we don't have in English.
Ooh, you should put that book in the show notes.
Good. I can't remember what it's called. I will. I'll send it to you.
Oh, that's fun.
Because I feel like, and that could be the topic of another show, is how language forms emotions.
Oh, I like that. Oh, let's do that in February. The language of love and other emotions.
Let's do it. Yeah.
Yes.
The language of love and other emotions coming to you soon. All right. Well, on that creepy note, I think we're done.
I think we are. Do we need to talk about what's coming up on the next episode?
Okay.
In the next episode, we're actually going to dive into what to do when you aren't feeling grateful, to help yourself feel a little more grateful. And we're going to talk about what that looks like in the brain using a theory called polyvagal theory.
That sounds fancy.
It is pretty fancy. It's a fun theory. I like brain things.
Well, I'll talk to you next week, but also in my mini text this evening.
Yeah, that sounds good. You want to go watch a horror movie?
Like, not even a little bit. I'm so glad October is over.
Hashtag grateful.
Hey, November. I'm hashtag grateful that October is over.
See you next time.
See you next time.
The Dr. Kimcast is hosted by Dr. Kimberly Corson and me, Daisha Clay. Our researcher and writer is Kim Corson, and the podcast is engineered and produced by me, again, Daisha Clay. To learn more about Dr. Kim and her services, find her online at drkimcorson.com. That's drkimcorson.com. There you'll find all the links you need to follow her and get in touch. The information provided on the Dr. Kimcast is not therapy, nor is it meant to take the place of therapy or professional mental health counseling. Dr. Kim is a developmentalist, which means that she coaches people through change and personal growth. Neither she nor Daisha treat or diagnose mental health concerns through the information given on this podcast. The Dr. Kimcast is brought to you by Pillowfort Studios.